So our next presenter today is Rishi Manchanda, and he is going to talk about an evening primary care clinic for VA, which is a VA patient-centered home, and he's from the Greater Los Angeles VA.
Good afternoon, everybody. So I'm a lead physician for what's called a Homeless Patient Aligned Care Team. That's another acronym from courtesy of the federal government. Homeless PACT, H-P-A-C-T, is really just a medical home for homeless veterans, and I'll give you a bit more background about this in a moment. In terms of relevant financial relationships for this, nothing to disclose, but I will speak about, I'll show one slide that relates to something I just wrote and published, so I'll make that disclosure at that point. Learning objectives for today really are to walk through a brief background to understand the context within the VA around initiatives to end homelessness and to provide more primary care services for all adults, including the homeless. I really am interested in actually presenting the social determinants of health framework in addition to the ambulatory ICU framework, which might be knowledgeable to many people here, but was relatively unique for us, at least in Los Angeles, to try to integrate that conceptual model into the development of our clinic. And we'll go through and discuss some unique attributes of what we put together that I think are pretty interesting. So the VA, there are three concurrent initiatives that have come together within the Veterans Administration, within the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, excuse me. One is this drive to increase access to the medical home. So again, the VA calls these patient-aligned care teams, or PACTs, P-A-C-T. I'll use PACT going forward instead of medical home, but know that that's what I'm talking about. I think I'm required by my job to use PACT instead of medical home. So at the same time, within the VA system, as you know, there are many different innovation hubs and centers, and one of them is actually based in Providence, Rhode Island, led by a physician named Tom O'Toole. So Tom O'Toole and several other researchers certainly, but Tom especially, has been doing great work around taking the medical home concept and thinking about what that means for vulnerable populations, including homeless adults. And Tom O'Toole was then given the leeway to be able to put together these two threads, this drive to advance medical homes along with this desire to end homelessness and the rise of the housing first model within the VA on the community care side, to kind of bring these two worlds together. It's important to note that even with that work that's happening in the VA, and I'll speak a bit more in detail about this, that there's still very little known about the intersection of healthcare and this drive for the medical home and homelessness, even though we know healthcare for the homeless looks a certain way. I think at the structural level, there's a big opportunity and a lot of questions certainly about what that might look like. So again, housing first. There's been a rise of this through the VA's own services and in partnership with HUD. You've had the HUD-VASH program, the VA Supportive Housing Program, right? That aims to provide immediate and open access to accessible housing for homeless veterans with case management supportive services. A lot of transitional and grant per diem homes as well for shelters for residents. So the Housing First initiative. Then you have the Patient-Centered Medical Home initiative. Within Los Angeles, the patient-centered initiative, the PACT initiative, has driven an incredible amount of angst among primary care providers, right? What does this look like? How do we align with the performance measures that have come on from on high to be able to redesign care? And as you know, with the medical home, that means continuity with one personal physician, a care team that includes an LVN, a nurse, sometimes a social worker. So there's that rise. And then, of course, what I was mentioning before with Tom O'Toole's work around homeless primary care, there's this opportunity to wed these together. So specifically, Tom O'Toole was given the opportunity to put together a demonstration program. And across about 32 sites now, I think there's as many as 36 sites across the country, different VA systems were asked to propose their models of how to do homeless primary care, the Homeless PACT. And every site had some variability in terms of what they could propose, but all of them had to make sure that there were PACT elements, that medical home concept, and of course taking the best practices for homelessness and then contextualizing that within the community that they were serving. Some sites took existing PACTs or medical homes that were large with patient panel sizes of 1,000 or 1,500 and then added on some additional services, social support services especially, to make that a homeless PACT. Other places, including what we did in Los Angeles, decided to look at some of the current problems we were having and decided to do something a little bit different. In Los Angeles, Los Angeles really is the epicenter. And I say, when I say Los Angeles an epicenter, LA always gets nervous about this, but for good reason, right? But is the epicenter for many things, and unfortunately is also the epicenter for homelessness among veterans in the U.S. There are a lot of different statistics that are out there, and I'm happy to share those in detail. The estimates vary depending on whether you look at annualized rates of homelessness among veterans. Here's one of the most accurate counts that I like to point to, the point-in-time estimate. Are you anybody familiar with the point-in-time process, right? So a snapshot, one night, go out, or in a series of coordinated efforts with volunteers and organizations in Los Angeles. There's one night in January, they all went out and they did a count. The methodology has gotten better. There are still some flaws with it, but looking at the red line here, the red line depicts for the last PIT count, the last point-in-time estimate, that about 7,000 homeless veterans were counted on one given night in Los Angeles. And of those, about 5,300 were unsheltered. So the vast majority are unsheltered, you know, based on this count. And, you know, we're looking at the order of magnitude of 1.8 to 2.5 times that number in terms of what we're thinking about of number of veterans on an annual basis. And there's a lot of contention within Los Angeles and certainly across the nation about how to estimate that. But let me table that for a second and just say that's a lot of people, right? And clearly in Los Angeles, the question then was, okay, so what do we do around this opportunity to create a homeless primary care clinic? And the thought was, well, let's go to where they're at, what I call the convenience, the 7-Eleven model, right? Let's use a convenience kind of model here. Where are they? They're showing up in the emergency rooms. The highest utilizers are showing up in the emergency departments by definition, right, and also inpatient units. Those veterans are consistently showing up, and these are the guys who, it turns out, are among the overly represented among the unsheltered veterans, right? They happen to be the ones, after all the data analysis, and this is familiar to many of you here, they're the ones with the highest rates of mental illness, the highest rates of substance use, the highest rates of insert social determinant of health here, right? They're these guys. These are the complex ones. And so we decided to create a clinic for those veterans specifically, targeting veterans with complex social and medical needs and high utilization patterns. And we decided to do so with a broad kind of perspective. So let me give some background to before I speak about these models. I had learned about this VA opportunity after spending many years, about 4 years, in South Central Los Angeles in a non-VA setting in a community health center. And I was the director of social medicine there, worked with a lot of people doing some great work thinking about how to bridge the clinical work with social determinants around housing and food security, et cetera. And then I heard of this opportunity. I was asked, do I want to, you know, we're looking for a doc to kind of lead this clinic, putting the program together. We need somebody to kind of start it up. So I said, sure, that sounds great. And when I came on board, I said, you know, it seems like, based on everything that everybody's saying, that this is clearly a care management program that has to have a clinical face because that's where the funding is coming from, right? It's a care management program that has to have a clinical face, but in that order, right, as opposed to a clinic that happens to do some care management. So there was agreement about that, and then we started talking about, all right, so how do we start this out? So the timing was interesting because the clinic was not yet open, and so they had just hired a lead physician, me. We had an LVN, and we had a clerk that I could steal for about three evenings a week, right, from one of the primary care things, and they said, okay, we're going to start here. So we had about a month of prep time after I came on board to sit down, and there were a lot of people, because of those national initiatives, the end to the drive to increase medical homes for patients, as well as a VA initiative to end homelessness. I skipped over that part. General Shinseki at one point a couple years ago said, we're going to end homelessness among veterans by the year 2015. Oh, President Obama had put that on high. So familiar to many of you, you've heard that proclamation, right? What do you think? So it was a big, hairy, audacious goal, right? It's incredible. It's absolutely necessary to make that, and it created a lot of downstream kind of activity, and including, and thankfully, I think within the VA that I joined in West Los Angeles, a lot of people were at the table, including, to their credit, the chiefs of community care, the chiefs of mental health, the primary care teams, and so they all came together. So we had all these high-level people sitting at the table saying, how do we create this one clinic? And so that was somewhat unusual, right, in terms of the synergy there. So we had an opportunity to sit down and have high-level discussions about a very micro-level intervention demonstration program. So the first thought was social determinants of health. Can we use this as a platform for thinking about this in a unique way? For those, just a show of hands, are anybody familiar with the World Health Organization's recent report in 2008? It's not so recent now. By the Commission on the Social Determinants of Health. I knew about it only because of some work, and I surfaced it during these conversations. It's a wonderful bit of literature, and it talks this framework that comes out of the WHO, and yes, I'm at the VA talking about the WHO right now, but this framework was an interesting framework to talk about a couple of elements. This framework was put together not out of the healthcare sector, but it was a report that indicated that clearly to address social drivers of disease like homelessness and other social factors, that we need action-oriented approaches that are intersectoral across those silos that Jen spoke about, multi-level, so high-level and micro-level and meso-level people working together, and then, of course, participatory. So in this case, we started thinking about this. What does it mean to have, do we have homeless veterans actually inform the design of the clinic? Well, I guess so. What does that look like? Can we do that? We framed it different ways, did a lot of communication around that, and of course that led to some interesting, a lot of excitement, kept the energy going, having a couple of patient representatives there, patients themselves show up at the clinic. And then we thought about, all right, well, we have this kind of multi-sectoral kind of alignment here. People are talking about social determinants, and how do we then do this? And of course the community-oriented primary care literature, the population-oriented primary care stuff that Tom O'Toole certainly pioneered, but has also been informed by the work that created community health centers in the nation, right? The COPC model. This model, population-oriented or community-oriented primary care, has a certain set of common standards, right? You first define the community, you then characterize the needs of that community, both medical and social, you then prioritize those needs. You then go through a rigorous assessment to make sure that you're quantifying that and doing it in a qualitative way as well. You do the intervention and then you evaluate it because there's no point in just doing it without tracking the outcomes, as Jen was saying, and so on. So what seems commonplace right now, but you know, there's a rigorous process. We brought that into the fray. And then we lastly kind of overlaid, all right, well, we're talking about high utilizers here. So let's as we define our community and characterize them, we're clearly saying we want to go after high utilizers. The patients came back and said, you got to think about it's care management. So we were hearing reverberations of our thought process, and we reached out and found the ambulatory ICU concept. Now, show of hands, those who've heard of the ambulatory ICU model. So Google this too. It's a great model that's been written about in non-VA settings, and that's the setting I was most familiar with before I came here. The ambulatory ICU is exactly as it sounds. It's outpatient intensive support services in a medical setting, mostly around high utilizers. So and it was popularized in a report about 3 years ago by in the New Yorker by Atul Gawande, who had an article called The Hotspotters. And in that report, for instance, spoke about a clinician in Camden, New Jersey, named Jeff Brenner, who would go out to hospitals, get their list of high utilizers, and realize they were all coming from one set of a community, some projects here, so he would go there and realized that those highest utilizers needed was intensive social supports. And so it was a biomedical intervention that was really a biosocial Trojan horse, right? It was about doing this work. So the ambulatory ICU model, there's many different iterations of it. It's a wonderful model. There's other models that are out there, including complex care management, something that the VA has been talking about, the GRACE model among the geriatric population. And in LA, there are a couple of prominent researchers who put together a model called the Behavioral Model for Vulnerable Populations. So we drew on all this research and we surfaced it and we put it into English. And then we had discussions again with patients and stakeholders from housing. And so this was all within a month, right? We sat down and tried to bring this all together. And then we kept that process going. We realized we needed to keep on having these strategic conversations while we were building we were kind of building a plane while flying it. So we wanted to make sure we had meetings as we went along. When we started talking, here's one of the ways we started making it into English. This is the shout out to a book I just wrote. It's called The Upstream Doctors, and it's available as an ebook published by the folks at TED. You know, TED Talks people. So they did a TED book. They published my book as a TED book. And social determinants gets really jargony. So instead, to talk to patients and colleagues, and frankly, for me to understand it, I put it on a upstream downstream kind of orientation here. So, you know, downstream here is the clinic. We were there, as most of us are, as providers. And of course, we needed to understand how different upstream factors played out. So to be able to have the conversations with my colleagues in community care and my social work experts, you know, and to be able to frame myself as a medical advisor to the social case management intervention that we were developing, you know, we needed to have a common language. And so we used a lot of pictures and and social determinants of health, infographics like that. And so what we developed finally was, again, this care management program with a clinical face. So it started out, you're seeing a lot of people listed on the left-hand side here in terms of providers. So currently we have an RN case manager, a social worker, a primary care provider, some outreach that's happening by our LVN, and some additional outreach that we kind of steal away from our community care folks, the folks who are really happy to share them. The LVN and a clerk who's in the clinic. And there's a few additional people I'll speak about in a second now, but when we started out, it was myself, an LVN, and a clerk. So medical team talking care management, right? So every night we showed up, it was three nights a week, and we would show up at the clinic in the emergency department, and we had a routine, and we still have the same routine to this day. We went first to the emergency room triage nurses. We co-located this clinic in the emergency department. Set up shop there, and then brought bagels, hot chocolate, candy, whatever their vice was, we brought to the ER triage nurses because we recognize power when we see it. And every day we would start with a handshake, start with that relationship building, and do the same thing. Just 2 minutes of an investment up front, and we just did that repeatedly. So no matter what, at the checklist of the first part of the night was, did you say hi to the ER nurses? Yes. All right. Well, good. So now let's start the process to screen the people who are waiting in the waiting room. In the VA system, as with most systems in the ERs, you triage people. And so the high-level patients were given low numbers, right? So level 1, 2, and 3 are patients who need to go straight to the emergency room to be monitored there. Level 4 and 5 patients are lower acuity patients. And it turns out there's an overrepresentation of people who are homeless in that population, especially in the evening hours that we decided to set up shop. So it's Tuesday night, Wednesday night, and Thursday night. We're there. We've said hi to the ER nurse, and now we go out to the level 4s and 5 waiting in the waiting room, and we start to say, we took a survey from one of the Philadelphia VA clinics that had been pioneering this, the National Center for Homelessness in the VA system, and we adapted their survey into a really short paper tool, and we asked 4 questions. Have you been using VA homeless services? Are you unsure about your housing in the next 90 days? Have you been homeless in the past 90 days? Right. And of course, are you currently homeless? So 4 different questions to get the same thing. Are you at risk or are you currently homeless? And if they said yes, and we asked, what was surprising, of course, was that not only people who looked homeless, but people who did not look homeless also said yes. And of course, then we offered them the ability to divert into our primary care home. And that's how we used our kind of 7-Eleven model of recruitment initially. We built this up, and over 7 months, eventually, after doing all those handshakes, both with the ER nurses, but also the multi-level meetings that we were having once a week with the chiefs of different departments, got enough traction and said, now we need to truly be that care management program. So we were able to bring on the social worker, bring on the RN care manager, and about 3 months after 2 months after they came on board, I officially handed the baton over. My title, because the VA requires it, is lead physician. But I handed over the baton to the social worker in the clinic, who is now the lead of the clinic. And I am her advisor, right? I'm available. I take direction from her, right? Saying, you know, we need to take care of this guy. You haven't done this yet, so it's a wonderful program. I get to work to the top of my license, and because of our success now, we have many patients who are coming in, really responding well. I'll speak about outcomes in a second, but because of the traction we're getting and the success in terms of change management and the internal championing that we're doing, we now have the ability. We recently became the 4th VA to have a medical legal partnership. So on our team, we also have a lawyer now. And I'll speak about, in the last 30 seconds, an innovation that I'll save to the last minute. But here's our results. 101 patients, their average DCG intensity, which is the severity rating system, is 1.46. What does that mean? Essentially, that's 2.5 times the severity of the patients based on their diagnoses than the average patient in a medical home, than the average Joe. So as we know, homeless patients are sicker. The weathering phenomenon, et cetera, right? So this is just another way to represent that. So we have very sick patients, among the sickest patients actually in the whole national pilot that I referred to, that led by Tom O'Toole. There hasn't been a reduction in the emergency department use, in part because of the way that the ED visits are counted. When they come in and see us, they first go through, many of them go through triage, and so there's a lot of double counting there. That's the way it is. But we have shown a 31.6% reduction in admissions. The savings from these deferred ED visits and inpatient stays is about $150,000. We've also enhanced reimbursements. So not only have we saved money, but we've also brought more money in because we're coding better, we're diagnosing them better, more appropriately taking care of them, and that's about $700,000 we've brought in within one fiscal year. And then, of course, the last part is we've chronicled improvements in the vertical integration, right? These meetings continue, and so what that's meant is that the system change phenomenon, this is more, as Jen was saying, it's more than just training, it's about systems change. For us, it's more than about an intervention, it's about a systems change opportunity, it's a social determinants of health opportunity. Tom Bonheimer came down and said he liked us a lot, and that's a quote he put in a report, so that meant a lot for me and us. This is the first model to do a couple of things. I'll end, I'm running past time, but 20 seconds. We have, every visit ends with a patient team huddle. The doctor, the social worker, the RN care manager, and now a lawyer joins the huddle at the end of the visit, even if it's a short visit for 10 minutes, and comes in and does a quick kind of check-in, because we know that's going to save us time later on. It's an upfront investment that saves us so much time later on for the communication failures that these guys already experienced enough of. And we also had to build a case management tracking tool because our medical EMR system wasn't meant for these guys. It was meant for billable encounters. So we built a care management tracking tool on a secure platform. Happy to talk about that more later.